Hey everybody, before we get started with this episode, I'm excited to let you all know that I have written another true crime book. Cults Uncovered is being published by the amazing publisher Dorling Kindersley on the 4th of February in America and the 6th of February elsewhere. Cults Uncovered is compiled of stories of some of the world's most disturbing cults and the megalomania that created them. It details the beginnings of self-proclaimed messiahs and follows their rise through subjection, abuse, manipulation, and ultimately, their downfall. It's available to pre-order at most bookstores, including Amazon, Waterstones, Penguin, Books A Million, WH Smith, and Barnes & Noble. At just £8.99 or $14.99, it's a very affordable price, and I would love for you guys to check it out if you're interested. If you do get a copy, please hit me up on social media and let me know what you think. I really enjoyed writing this book. I've included Amazon links in the show notes. Also, if you see it in bookstores, please take a photo and tag me. I love to see how far my books have travelled across the world. Thank you for listening, and now on with today's episode. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. The purpose of the police is to protect and serve. But what happens when a failure on their behalf leads to the death of a young woman? Well, in Gateshead, Newcastle, in 2016, this is exactly what happened. There were missed opportunities and procedural failings by police and the army when 24-year-old Alice Ruggles contacted them for help and for protection while being the victim of a stalking campaign. The inactivity of those entrusted to care for the community led to the brutal and preventable murder of a young woman. ...24-year-old Alice Ruggles was originally from the Leicestershire area, where she went to Leicester High School for Girls. Later, she studied design at Northumbria University and went to work for Sky in Newcastle. She moved into an apartment on Rawling Road in Gateshead with her friend and colleague, Maxine McGill.
She was very square, is what she would call herself. She was always focused on doing the right thing at work, but at the same time as having a laugh and a joke, she would always bring out the goofy side of anybody that she actually spoke to.
Alice's family described her as a kind, clever and beautiful woman who, quote, saw the fun side of everything, had an infectious personality and an incredible sense of humour. Alice's mother, Sue Hills, was head of maths at Leicester High School for Girls, while her father, Clive, was a professor at the University of Leicester. Alice had two brothers, Nick and Patrick, and a sister, Emma.
That was my older sister, then me, then Alice, and my younger brother. So we used to go to Cornwall every year, and I've got very strong memories of playing on the beach and having barbecues.
To her friends, Alice was always the joker, the one with the awful puns and the queen of comebacks and quick wit. Next, we will hear from Sue and Clive.
She was kind, she was funny, she always had a smile. She had this amazing mischievous sense of humour. She was the sort of person that, if she came into the room, she'd kind of make you happy.
Go, Alice!
She turned into such a lovely adult. The worst thing is, when I go home at the end of the day, she always used to be waiting for me.
It was around 6:30 p.m. on the 12th of October 2016 when Maxine arrived home from work. By this point in the evening, Alice would typically be at home. However, the front door was locked. Maxine pounded on the door for a few moments, hoping that Alice would open the door and let her in, but to no avail. Maxine looked through the letterbox and saw Alice's shoe sitting in the living room. She knew that she was in, but why wasn't she opening the door? Maxine began to panic. She climbed over a wall into their backyard and then climbed in through an open window. She made her way through the apartment, and while walking past the bedroom, Maxine noticed that the bathroom door was laying wide open, and inside, the entire floor was covered in blood. Laying in the middle of the bathroom floor was the lifeless body of Alice. For a split second, Maxine thought that Alice had fallen over and hit her head on the bath or toilet. However, it soon became apparent that this was no accident. Upon entering the bathroom, Maxine knew at once that Alice was dead due to the massive amount of blood on the floor, the awkward position she was lying in, and her blue face. Quote, "There had been a struggle. Her legs both looked broken. In the position she was in, I knew one was broken. They were away from her, towards the shower, and her right leg was across next to the basin," end quote, recollected Maxine. Upon closer inspection, it was evident that Alice was suffering with serious sharp force injuries. Her throat had been slit from ear to ear. Maxine immediately placed a call to 999.
"Please, I've just come back to my flat and the door was locked, so I crawled to the window and my flatmate's covered in blood in the bathroom."
"Is she breathing?"
"I don't know, I can't look, I'm sorry."
"Okay, try and stay calm."
Alice! Oh my God, she's dead.
Where's the blood from?
It's everywhere, I'm covered in blood, she's blue. An ex is an absolute psychopath.
Say that again, sorry.
She put in a complaint at her ex and she wrote 101 at the weekend to report that she started in contact and said we're going to do nothing. Now this has happened.
What's he called?
Harry Dillon. Thank you, definitely him.
Emergency services rushed to the scene. By the time they arrived, however, it was already much too late and Alice was pronounced dead at the scene by paramedics. Police made their way to the scene to investigate.
The bathroom's completely awash with blood.
It was most definitely a murder scene. She had suffered horrific injuries to her neck. There was no other explanation for those injuries and the amount of blood there.
There's no way, I don't think something like that could be self-inflicted.
Right, it's murder.
It is, John.
Yeah.
Following the discovery of Alice's body, her family released a statement paying tribute to her. It read in part, quote, "She was kind, clever and beautiful. We are struggling to come to terms with the fact that she is not with us anymore. She loved life, loved her friends and loved her job. She had so much to live for. Nothing can ever replace her," end quote. Investigators carried out door-to-door inquiries to see if any of Alice's neighbours witnessed or heard anything out of the ordinary or anything suspicious. They were attempting to establish the exact circumstances surrounding Alice's death. Cheryl Inston told investigators that she had heard shouting and commotion on Wednesday evening, but said she wasn't sure if it was related to the murder or not. Quote, "I heard a van or car speed off. I do not know if it was involved. It was around 5 p.m. when I heard the commotion. I do not know if it was related. I did not hear anyone scream," end quote, she said. Meanwhile, forensic experts combed through Alice's flat to gather any evidence. During the 999 call that Maxine had placed, she named 25-year-old Treman Dillon, also known as Harry, as the likely killer of Alice. Harry was a serving Lance Corporal with the Royal Regiment of Scotland, based at Glencorse Barracks in Pennyquick, Midlothian.
"I was told there was some mystery between her and her ex. What's the score with that?"
"He's a soldier based up in Scotland, in the Edinburgh area.
Right.
And we're doing some research on him now."
"How old's he?"
"I believe in his 20s.
Right, okay. What I would like to know is, in relation to the ex and the army, is he there or is he AWOL? Is he on his toes? Is he not there? Yeah. Reg details as well, a run through ANPR initially if he has been down."
That's an action.
He was subsequently tracked back to the barracks using the police's automatic number plate recognition system. He was arrested while trying to scale a perimeter fence. Harry was arrested and charged with Alice's murder.
Hello. So your surname is spelled Delta Hotel, India, Lima, Lima, Oscar, November. You're left or right-handed?
Right.
Arrested for?
Suspicion of murder.
Location of arrest?
That is at the guardroom at Glencourse Barracks, Penicuik.
Following his arrest, police collected forensic evidence.
Harry himself is potentially a crime scene, so there was a number of things that I wanted taken from him forensically. Blood. Swabs from the injuries to his face. We've seized the clothing that he had on, and obviously his jewellery as well, to see if we could get any of Alice's blood on any of that.
As a help to hero's wristband?
Right.
Quite often, suspects will wash their hands, they'll think that there won't be any blood or other traces on the jewellery, so that is one of the first areas that I would think about.
They found traces of blood on Harry's Help for Heroes wristband and on the steering wheel of his car.
Harry's car was uplifted, was brought back to our force area for forensic examination. We discovered a small spot of blood on the steering wheel. A spot of blood in the car could be absolutely crucial for us.
Investigators subsequently announced that Alice's murder was an isolated incident and that they were looking for nobody else in connection to her murder. The murder case was referred to the Independent Police Complaints Commission because Alice had been in contact with the officers prior to her murder. This revelation implied that Alice had complained about Harry in the past. Harry was born in India and moved around as his father was in the army. He started his degree in India and then was given the option to do the final 2 years at Queen Margaret University near Edinburgh. In 2012, he joined the army after they came to the university to recruit. He met Alice on Facebook in 2015 through a mutual friend. The duo chatted online before deciding to meet in person.
They started talking on the 1st of October, and by the 31st, they were in a relationship. They hadn't even met, so that in itself is shocking. I think everyone was a bit dubious about it. People were concerned, but ultimately everyone just wanted her to be happy, and she seemed really happy. From everything she told us, he seemed exactly like the type of person that she deserved and that she should be with.
In October of 2015, they entered into a relationship, but by summer of 2016, the relationship had already turned sour. Harry was extremely controlling, possessive, and manipulative. On one occasion, Alice had been in the shower when Harry forced her out and made her stand in the kitchen naked with shampoo still in her hair just so he could use the toilet. Harry was possessive of Alice, but despite this, he was the one being unfaithful. He often went behind Alice's back and met numerous women off Tinder for casual hookups. When Alice confronted him about the affairs, he denied it. Alice, of course, felt as though she couldn't trust Harry, but by this point, Harry had taken to extenuate issues with Alice's friends in a bid to isolate her. He would routinely check her messages, and he viewed Alice as his property.
We rented a cottage, and we just dressed up as Disney princesses, and essentially had our own Halloween celebration at a cottage. Wi-Fi is limited. She would move furniture to sit in corners to message him, and if she couldn't get in contact with him, he would message me and ask if she could use my phone to speak to him. And she was getting quite distressed that he was getting very upset about not being able to speak to her. He was also making comments about how much she was drinking, but she was at a weekend away with her friends. I actually don't think I'd ever seen her cry. She cried 2, maybe 3 times that weekend, and I just had never seen her like that before.
In addition, Harry picked away at Alice's confidence. He made her feel self-conscious by criticising her appearance and taunting her about other women.
His initial reason for calling was to say happy birthday, but somewhere in that conversation that they had, he said that they had had Victoria's Secret models to visit and then went into great detail to describe how beautiful they were and that he was really enjoying them being there. And she was quite upset by it. This was maybe the first in a long line of instances where he tried to make her feel insecure about their relationship. But then when she would bring it up, he would act as if she was crazy.
Alice confided in her friends that he didn't like her drinking, putting on makeup, or wearing nice clothes because he had assumed that she was doing so to try and impress somebody else.
He commented on the size of her nose and the hair on her forearms. Sort of, he gave her complexes about stuff that she wouldn't necessarily have had a complex about. And he would also comment on the way that she dressed. Who are you trying to impress? He seemed to have an opinion on everything, and it was always quite negative.
Alice became withdrawn and deeply troubled by Harry's behaviour, but she finally built up enough courage to end the toxic relationship. However, Harry refused to accept it and took to harassing and stalking Alice. He threatened to chop his own arms off and then write a letter to Alice in his blood and threatened to commit suicide. When the emotional blackmail didn't work, Harry took to sending lengthy, pleading messages, begging Alice to take him back.
Alice, please. Please, 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 please. I can't move.
He sent picture after picture of himself in tears and even messaged Alice's mother on Facebook, begging her for help in reconciling them. In one message to Sue, he wrote, quote, I beg you to help me. Take me as your son and maybe you can feel my pain and loathing. Sue later said in reference to the messages, quote, I thought he was immature and his rambling message was inappropriate. He seemed to think that as her mother, I could influence the way Alice thought of him, end quote. When this didn't work either, Harry threatened blackmail in a more sinister sense. During their relationship, Alice had sent Harry sexual photographs of herself, and Harry now used this to his advantage, threatening to release the photographs on social media if Alice didn't take him back. When Alice refused to budge, Harry claimed that he was only joking and that, quote, if he was a bad guy, that's what he would do, end quote. After his arrest, it was discovered that Harry had an entire folder on his computer of sexual photographs of Alice, which he had named Tramp.
The sheer volume of messages that he sent to her, she found very overwhelming and uncomfortable with. Her phone would just go berserk. He would flip from emotionally blackmailing her and saying that he couldn't live without her and he wouldn't let her do this and this wasn't okay, to then sending her a nice message as if they had made up and they were back in a relationship, saying, oh, don't make plans for this weekend, I'm coming down, I've got plans for us, as if it was completely normal.
When it became clear that Alice was not going to take him back, Harry threatened to go to police with an allegation that she had hit him. On one occasion, Alice did hit Harry after finding out that he had been meeting up with women from Tinder. Soon enough, the stalking escalated, and Harry hacked into Alice's social media accounts by using his skills as a signalman. He hacked her Facebook, WhatsApp, and Snapchat. He also hacked into the account of an army officer named Mike Tabissa, who Alice had met through her sister, Emma, who had been serving alongside him in the army in Germany. Alice and Mike had swapped phone numbers and added each other on Facebook. After chatting for a while, the relationship turned romantic and Alice had even introduced Mike to her parents. In fact, Alice and Mike had been due to spend the weekend together just the day after Alice was killed. Harry even contacted Mike himself and begged him to tell him, quote, where you guys stand, end quote, before claiming that Alice was playing the both of them off, despite the fact that Alice had made it clear that she wanted nothing to do with Harry. Eventually, Alice called police and reported Harry's disturbing behaviour.
Evening, Nottingham Police.
Hi there, I just need a bit of advice really, more than anything. So I've split up with my boyfriend about 3 months ago. Since then, I know that he's hacked into my Facebook and also my phone. And then tonight, I had a knock at my door and there was no one there. And then it happened again two or three times. And he's, like, left some flowers and chocolates on the, like, outside windowsill. And, like, I'm concerned. My friends have been telling me to call the police. I've been putting it off, but I just feel a bit, like, shaken up tonight.
What's he called?
Harry Dillon.
There's a number of things you can do.
Yeah.
Would also solicit them and take out an injunction.
Yeah.
Keep them away from you.
Yeah.
Or report it directly to the police now and we can issue them the PIN notice, which means if he ever comes near you again or contacts again, he'll be arrested.
Okay.
Harry was subsequently issued with a police information notice for stalking and ordered to stay away from Alice. However, just 4 days later, Alice received a text message from Harry telling her that he was in the garden, but the message was followed by another which said that he was in the Princess Garden in Edinburgh. However, later on in the middle of the night, Alice was awoken by a knock on the front door. When she opened the door, there was nobody there. However, moments later, she heard another knock, this time on her bedroom window. She opened the curtains to see Harry standing there, having driven the whole way from Edinburgh. Harry didn't say a word to Alice other than, quote, it's okay, end quote. He just placed a bunch of flowers and chocolate on her windowsill before slowly backing off, holding his hands outright to show that he wasn't carrying anything else. Harry then left Alice an unnerving voicemail during which he told her that he had come to her apartment to, quote, prove that he was there for her, end quote. During the message, Harry also repeatedly told Alice that he wasn't going to, quote, kill her, and that I would never hurt you or do anything to you, end quote.
Hey, Alice. After we spoke and you didn't want to speak, well, you didn't want to call me again, so that's why I decided to come down to give you flowers and chocolate. But I know you're not going to come out in front of me and speak to me, so that's why I left it there.
Following the terrifying ordeal, Alice messaged Maxine, who had been staying overnight with her boyfriend. When Maxine came back home, she recalled that Alice was as white as a sheet and was visibly shaking.
When I heard the voicemail the day after, it made me shudder. For how many times he says that he wasn't going to kill her. It was a veiled threat. It had to be. He knew what he was doing. He wanted her to be scared at that point. And it worked. Alice was petrified.
Alice's friends and family could see her happy-go-lucky demeanour literally evaporate as she was overcome with fear and concern about what Harry would do next. Over time, Alice gradually lost weight and became afraid to go out, especially alone.
Alice confided in me quite a lot about her relationship. He was almost pitting away at her so that he was left with just bones. Because inevitably that's what happened to Alice, is she started to lose a lot of weight. She started to physically shake in front of you because of what he was doing and how he was treating her. She was a shell of who she used to be, and I watched it happen right in front of my eyes.
Harry ignored the police information notice and sent Alice a parcel containing photographs and a letter. Following the unwarranted interaction, Alice once again called the police. During the phone call, Alice said, quote, he sounded crazy in the messages, completely obsessed with me. I feel harassed, alarmed, and distressed by him. I want him to leave me alone. I want nothing more to do with him. I am terrified of his actions. I am being stalked and I wanted to stop. I am now tense and feeling uneasy all the time. It's affected my work, concentration, and I no longer feel safe in my own home, end quote. However, this time, the officer who had dealt with the original report was on leave. Another officer told Alice that it was her decision whether she wanted Harry arrested or not. This lackluster response made Alice feel as though she was being palmed off by police, and now she didn't know where to turn. Alice, who still cared about Harry and didn't want to see him get into trouble, told the officer that no, she didn't want Harry arrested. The officer who took the call contacted Harry's barracks in Edinburgh and spoke with a superior. Harry was told to stop contacting Alice or he would face arrest. Just 5 days later, Alice would be dead. Following Harry's arrest for Alice's murder, his story as to what had happened on the evening of the murder changed several times. Initially, Harry had claimed that Alice was alive and well when he left her apartment on the 12th of October, after showing up unexpectedly.
Okay, this interview is being digitally recorded. We're in interview room number 10 at Cold West Police Station in Newcastle. So, Harry, yesterday, Alice Ruggles was found at her home address in Gateshead and she'd been murdered.
Mm.
Okay, did you murder Alice?
No, I did not murder Alice.
Do you have any knowledge of this?
No, I don't have any knowledge of this.
Were you present when this murder occurred?
No, I wasn't.
Can you tell me what you were doing yesterday then, from 10 a.m. until the time you were arrested last night, please?
So, I drove down towards Newcastle, and because I just wanted answers. So I drove down to speak to her. She was sitting in the living room, on the sofa, and she was doing something on the phone. So I knocked at the window, and her first reply was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like she was like, what the hell are you doing here? Like that kind of reply.
So it's a bare window
yeah.
that she's looking through, and she sees you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no arrangement whatsoever for you to be there.
No.
How do you end up in the house?
I never entered inside her house.
Right.
I was always outside.
Uh-huh.
She's the one who came outside. So she came from the back, the back area, and I tried to hug her. She said, I don't want to speak to you or see you because I've heard stories about how guys like you end up killing their girlfriends. And I've got a feeling you'll probably do the same, and I don't want to die, I want to live. And I said, I'm begging you, once, please, when people break up, at least give each other a hug or say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and hold her arms like this.
Explain that bit, that's important, isn't it?
Right, can I use you, please?
Yeah.
So if I'm walking, I'm like, so she just had her arms like this with her phone in one of her hands.
Yeah.
So I was like, Alice, please, can... And as soon as I did that, just holding her arms mm-hmm. with her right hand, she just pulled it off and just went like, fuck off, you creep.
However, when police presented to him that they had found Alice's blood on his Help for Heroes wristband and on the steering wheel of his BMW and that her DNA was under his fingernails, he relayed a different version of events. Next, Harry claimed that he was trying to stop Alice from killing herself, but said that he had fled from the apartment after Alice stabbed herself and he saw her blood. Harry said that he had a phobia of blood, which stemmed from his service in Afghanistan when he saw the aftermath of a helicopter crash. However, Harry had visited the crash site 2 days after the crash, and apparently he didn't know there were any casualties and the wreckage was covered by a tarpaulin. Are you a podcaster? Better yet, are you an indie podcaster? Gone are the days where only the big podcasts receive sponsorships. Enter Podcorn, the easiest new way for brands and podcasters to connect. No matter how small your podcast, Podcorn is simplifying every aspect of podcast sponsorships. You can set your own rate and collaborate with brands directly, and there is no exclusivities. As an indie podcaster myself, I absolutely adore Podcorn. This episode you're listening to right now is even sponsored by Podcorn through the Podcorn website. They have an amazing marketplace to connect podcasters to awesome sponsorship opportunities, including host-read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, and more. So click the link in my show notes to sign up to Podcorn today and start browsing sponsorship opportunities. As we ring in the new year, some of us make resolutions, such as managing our personal finances better or taking better care of ourselves. Enter Harry's. Harry's makes award-winning razors along with an amazing and extensive range of grooming essentials to keep you looking your best in 2020. And at $2 per cartridge, Harry's can save you money all year round. Harry's is a return to the essential, quality craftsmanship at a fair price. They stand by their product so much that they offer a 100% quality guarantee. Now here's the best part. Harry's has a special offer for listeners of my show. New customers will get $5 off a trial set at harrys.com/morbidology. You'll get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe and a travel cover. Join the millions of guys who've already switched and go to harrys.com/morbidology to claim your free offer. Alice's funeral was held at St Andrew's Church in her home village of Tur Langston in Leicestershire on the 7th of November. Around 400 mourners packed into the church to pay their final respects to Alice. The service included hymns and prayers, and her parents were among those who dedicated special tributes and poems. Several of Alice's favourite songs were played, including Songbird by Fleetwood Mac and Think of Me by the Phantom of the Opera. Her family asked for donations to be made to the Susie Lamplugh Trust, which campaigns for personal safety. Alice was cremated and her ashes were subsequently buried in the church in Thur Langston. Following her burial, her loved ones and locals gathered at the Crown Pub, which was just across the road from the church. Just the week later, Harry appeared in court to plead not guilty to Alice's murder. A provisional trial date was set for the next year and Harry was further remanded in custody. In April of 2017, Harry's murder trial began. During opening statements, prosecutor Richard Wright described the crime scene. He described how Maxine had come home to find, quote, the door to the bathroom was open and lying on the floor in a room which was literally covered in blood was Alice Ruggles. She knew at once that she was dead. A massive amount of blood and the awkward position she was lying in told Maxine that her friend was beyond help. She was right. Alice was dead and she had suffered horrendous injuries she couldn't have survived. End quote. Describing her injuries, he added, quote, someone had slit her throat open from ear to ear, leaving her neck gaping wide open. End quote. According to prosecutor Richard Wright, Alice would have rapidly bled to death after suffering the massive injury. He also described how the second officer had asked Alice if she wanted Harry arrested. Quote, sadly, the dilemma this young girl was in is obvious. She was scared and worried about the behaviour of the man she had plainly loved and cared for. Generously, she told the officer she did not want him arrested. She could not have known that she would pay for that decision with her life just 5 days later, end quote, said prosecutor Richard Wright. The 999 call was played out in court, followed by prosecutor Richard Wright saying that Maxine had a very good reason to name Harry as the most likely suspect in her friend's murder. Quote, she had seen at first hand the relationship between the two of them and the decline of that relationship to an end Harry refused to accept. Maxine had seen the obsessive and manipulative manner in which he harassed and stalked Alice in the weeks and months before her death. End quote. He announced that Harry was utterly obsessed with Alice, and ultimately, it was this obsession that led him to kill her. He referred to Alice's murder as, quote, one final act of dominance and control, end quote, and said that Harry climbed in through Alice's bedroom window. When Alice spotted Harry, she managed to barricade herself in the bathroom, but Alice stood at just 5 feet 2 inches tall. She was no match for the soldier, who was almost a foot taller than her and 3 stone heavier. According to prosecutor Richard Wright, Harry managed to storm his way into the bathroom and savagely attack Alice, leaving her with a wound that was unsurvivable. The murder weapon had never been found, but it was speculated that it was a 6-inch knife which was missing from the kitchen. During the trial, it was revealed that Harry had driven from Edinburgh to Alice's apartment on the 10th of October, just days before she was killed. He took a photograph of the back of Alice's apartment in the middle of the night. According to prosecutor Richard Wright, this was potentially an aborted attempt to gain access and kill Alice. On the 12th of October, Harry told army bosses that he needed to leave the barracks to sort out a passport issue. He left in full military combat, and according to the prosecution, Harry then drove down to Rawling Road, where Alice lived, and arrived there at around 4:13 p.m. As he sat outside Alice's apartment, Harry messaged Jasmine Dansby, a woman he had met on Tinder just 24 hours earlier, and was trying to arrange a date with her later on that night in Durham. Jasmine turned down the offer because she had agreed to go out with friends and didn't want to let them down. He replied that he was there for a, quote, last-minute job, end quote, and was willing to even come to her home to see her. Jasmine apologised and said that they would keep in touch and try and arrange a date for a later time. After finishing her shift at Sky, Alice was dropped home by a colleague named Paul Lynch.
It's pretty much one-off footage. I certainly haven't seen anything like it. It's from a video camera installed to a car, parked up just a couple of doors away from where Alice lives. It really is a find. It's the first time, certainly, in over 10 years I've ever had a dash cam. What you actually see is Paul Lynch driving this white vehicle here. He works with Alice and he parks up and he talks to Alice for about a minute or so. Alice's head goes forward, the door's open, and she said her goodbyes to Paul Lynch, and that time's at 17:31. This is the last image that we have of Alice alive. She's entering a house there, and within approximately 1 hour, less than that, Alice will be dead.
Inside, Alice tried on ball gowns and was known to be alive as late as 6:04 p.m. when she sent a text to Mike. They had been planning on spending the weekend together, and Mike was asking if he should hire a car or get a taxi if they planned on going out drinking. Alice jokingly replied, quote, "Is anything in life really non-alcohol related?" End quote. Harry knew that Alice and Mike were spending the weekend together because he had hacked her Facebook and WhatsApp. Maxine arrived home at 6:30 p.m, meaning that in the space of 25 minutes, prosecutors claimed that Harry had climbed into Alice's window and attacked her. The full details of Alice's brutal murder were laid bare for the jury to hear. Her throat had been sliced 6 times, and she had a stab wound to her nose and defensive injuries to her hands. In addition, there were injuries to her chest which appeared as though she had been knelt on. Harry was spotted on CCTV, speeding away from the scene at about 6:25 p.m. Prosecutor Richard Wright acknowledged Harry's version of events wherein Alice committed suicide and he fled from the apartment because he had a phobia of blood. However, according to the prosecution, Harry had lied about his military service to cover up his offence. Quote, "He must have known that Alice had died having suffered such horrendous injuries, but he was capable of telling a series of lies to explain why he had left the woman he called the love of his life to bleed to death on the bathroom floor." End quote. Yes, Harry had served in Afghanistan and he did attend a helicopter crash. However, the wreckage was completely covered. He saw no blood. He saw no casualties. He wasn't even aware that there were casualties. Quote, "Even this version of events has been properly rejected by the evidence," end quote, said the prosecutor. He also told the jury that after slashing Alice's throat, Harry stole her phone so that when he fled the apartment, she couldn't call for help. During the trial, Alice's housemate, Maxine, took to the stand. She first of all described her relationship with Alice. She said that they had first met while working at Sky before Alice moved into her apartment. Quote, "We got on very well. She was different from myself but had the most vibrant personality. We just got each other," end quote, she explained to the courtroom. Maxine next described how disappointed Alice was with the police officer's second response to her phone call. Quote, "She said that she had been palmed off and the person she spoke to asked her, 'What do you want to do about it?' She said, 'I don't know. That's why I was calling you.' She told them that she had been asked to get in touch if there was any further contact from Harry. Basically, she told me it was just a waste of time," end quote, said Maxine. She described how in the early days of their relationship, Harry tried too hard. He was overly nice and he creeped her out.
"I first met Harry when he came to the flat. He came across very gentlemanlike, but there was something just too gentlemanlike about him that got my back up. He almost would put on a Scottish accent so that he would try and relate to me. He was almost overly nice. It was very strange."
When asked about the relationship later on between Alice and Harry, Maxine said, quote, "It was controlling, manipulative, possessive," end quote. She said that when Alice broke up with Harry, he became emotional before becoming aggressive and possessive. She also recollected the events leading up to discovering Alice's body.
"Alice had left work about 5 o'clock. I was due to leave work about 6 o'clock. I was due to go with my partners to stay that night. I had left my mobile phone in the flat by mistake, so Alice had known that I was going to take a pit stop at the flat. My key wouldn't work because I had asked Alice, being in the flat on her own,
to keep the security snip on. I then started trying to scream through the letterbox her name. Just, Alice, Alice, it's me, can you let me in? Nothing. But the place was eerie. And it was so silent. You could hear a pin drop. And at that point, I started panicking. Something come over me to run to the back of my property. The first thing I noticed was the window of the living room was open as if someone had climbed through it. Panic just set in. I headed straight to my bedroom to get my mobile phone to dial Alice. When I left my bedroom, that's when I noticed Alice lying on the bathroom floor. And I just ran to her. I remember thinking that she'd fell and hurt herself, or she'd cut herself on something. And then I just knew what had happened to her. I knew she'd been attacked. But trying to describe that scene, I can't put into words, because it's like nothing I've ever seen in a film, never mind real life.
When Alice's sister, Emma, a British Army officer, took to the stand, she told the courtroom how she had advised her sister to call police. However, she informed her that she already had. She explained that the officer on the other end of the line appeared apathetic to her complaint, and eerily, she foreshadowed her fate. Quote, "They will fucking respond to me once he has stabbed me," end quote. Now, during the trial, Harry had a new version of events. According to Harry's defence team, Harry had gone to Alice's apartment that evening because she owed him £90, and he had arranged to meet another woman in Durham later on that he had met on Tinder. They claimed that an argument developed during which Alice slapped Harry and grabbed his hair. Quote, "He went into the living room where he was confronted by Alice, who was holding a carving knife in her right hand and advancing towards him. He didn't think he could safely escape, so he grabbed her right wrist and then put her in a headlock," end quote. Harry's defence described how Harry and Alice were in the bathroom when Alice collapsed and her head smacked off the glass scales on the floor. Apparently, Harry confessed to Alice that he was meeting another woman that night, and Alice responded by grabbing the knife and attempting to stab Harry. However, he managed to grab her wrist. He claimed that Alice then dug her fingernails into his knee and he threw the knife underneath the sink. Allegedly, Alice then grabbed the knife, but hid her head on the sink while doing so. Harry claimed that Alice then lunged towards him with the knife and he attempted to grab her. However, she lost her balance and the knife went into her throat. Harry claimed that he took the knife from the scene because he planned on committing suicide, because everybody would think that he had killed Alice. He thought of dialing 999, but his phone was in the car. Quote, "He picked up Alice's phone and walked out with it. He decided he wanted to speak to his father," end quote, said his defence lawyer. When Harry testified on his own behalf, he reiterated what his defence had claimed. He described how Alice had come at him with a butcher knife. He described how he told Alice that he was in Durham to meet another woman. Quote, "That absolutely infuriated her and led her to pick the knife up again with her right hand. I grabbed the toilet roll holder and tried to strike her forearm with it to get the knife out of her hand. She came towards me. I moved forward to deflect her arm. She fell with her head close to the toilet seat. I'm 100% sure that the knife was stuck. It was coming out of the right side of her neck. I grabbed the handle and pulled it out," end quote. He told the courtroom that he didn't call 999 because he was afraid. According to Harry, he contemplated stabbing himself and then driving off a hill on the way back to Scotland. However, the evidence completely contradicted this version of events. Pathologist Dr. Jennifer Bolton said that Alice's neck had been slashed or sliced at least 6 times, leaving a wound that was 120 millimeters long and 30 millimeters wide. The wounds were so deep that they had severed Alice's carotid artery, her windpipe, and her voice box, and had cut through to her spine. Quote, "This injury has been caused by multiple uses of the knife," end quote, testified Dr. Jennifer Bolton. She had also suffered a deep cut to the tip of her nose and evidence that she had been knelt on, presumably as her throat was slit. There were also numerous defensive wounds to her hands and bruising to various parts of her body. During cross-examination by prosecutor Richard Wright, Harry admitted that he was obsessed with Alice, but denied stalking her. Wright listed the numerous attempts that Harry had made to contact Alice in the weeks before her murder, which included 3 240-mile round trips from Edinburgh to Alice's apartment, where he just hung around outside at night. Quote, hanging around in the dark, scaring the woman you tell the jury you love, end quote, questioned Wright, to which Harry replied, quote, I have no justification, end quote. According to Harry, quote, I knew everything about her, all her friends, what she liked to eat, what she liked to drink, what makeup brand she loved. That's not because I was a stalker. It's because I used to care and listen every time and hear what she said, end quote. At one point during the cross-examination, Harry even offered to take a polygraph test, but as we all know, they were inadmissible in court and technically pointless. The courtroom would soon come to discover that Alice wasn't the only former partner that Harry had harassed. Following the breakup of a prior relationship with Inigo Nemeth, Harry confronted her in the street in Kent. Harry demanded to know why she had broken up with him. When she threatened to call police if he did not move out of her way, he continued to block her path and question her. Inigo was with a male friend during the ordeal, and Harry questioned, quote, is this who you're sleeping with? I cannot believe that you would leave me for this. Why did you take my girlfriend away? End quote. Harry then proceeded to spit on Inigo's face and call her a bitch before running away from the scene. He had been charged with common assault, but on the day of the trial, the case was discontinued after Harry accepted a restraining order for a year. In his closing speech, prosecutor Richard Wright said, quote, it was a terrible death and the case represents the tragic loss of a young and promising life. This was a dangerous obsession born out of his inability to let go of something he viewed as being his. He obviously reached boiling point when he discovered Alice was in the early stages of a relationship with another man. He was determined that she should not be happy with anyone else. We say the evidence proves beyond any reasonable doubt that he is a murderer. We say this man is a serial liar. His words change like the wind. Alice Ruggles didn't trust him, and we say, neither should you, end quote. Jamie Hill, who was defending Harry, said in his closing speech, quote, in the confined space of that bathroom with a sharp knife and two people tussling, that terrible outcome could have been the consequence of an uncontrolled struggle. The accident he puts forward is a possibility. A wound inflicted without intent is entirely possible. It may just be the chaos that followed on from Alice's death. The defendant running around like a headless chicken. All of that tends to suggest none of this was intended or expected. It's unlikely he set out to do serious harm to Alice. If it may have been an accident, he is not guilty. If he was wrestling with her and lacked intent, the verdict should be no more than manslaughter, end quote. Harry Dillon was found guilty of Alice Ruggles' murder and sentenced to life in prison with a minimum term of 22 years. During the sentencing phase, Judge Paul Sloan addressed Harry, quote, not a shred of remorse have you shown from the first to the last. Indeed, you were concentrating so hard on getting your story right when giving evidence, you forgot even to shred a crocodile tear, end quote.
It was a relief that he'd been sentenced, but it seemed like too short a time. I have two worries about it. One, that he could do the same thing to somebody else. And that he's never, ever accepted what he's done, so he doesn't even know it's wrong.
I still think he would be a danger to people. And I would do everything in my power to make sure that he cannot come out after that time.
Following the verdict, Alice's father, Clive, read out a statement in court, which read, quote, I hope Harry will eventually face up to what he did. I hope sooner or later he will have the common decency to admit what he did and will come to truly regret it. Not just regret taking her life, but that he had such a permanent and horrible impact on her family and friends. I intend to spend as much time as possible for the rest of my life celebrating Alice's life and preventing something like this happening to others, end quote. In the wake of Alice's murder, many said that the police and army could have prevented her death. She sought protection numerous times, and each time she called, she had ample evidence to prove that she was being stalked and harassed. But after each phone call, no such protection ever came. In what kind of parallel universe does a stalking victim call the shots when it comes to apprehending a serial stalker? The police are supposed to protect victims, and one would fathom that they have a sufficient insight into victim psychology to comprehend that in such heightened situations, a vulnerable victim may not be the best arbiter. In a bid to turn their grief into something positive, Alice's family set up the Alice Ruggles Trust with the aim of raising money to provide training and education about issues such as stalking. They campaigned in support of the Stalking Protection Bill, which has now become law, and continue to campaign for a serial perpetrator register.
We, as a charity, need to be helping people recognise, before it's getting too late, how serious stalking is, so that people actually go to the help that is out there, the stalking helpline of the charities, or to the police, much, much sooner than Alice did.
In 2019, a review found that Northumbria Police and the Army failed to protect Alice by not properly addressing the evident signs of Harry's jealous and obsessive behaviour. A domestic homicide review, which was carried out by Gateshead Community Safety Board, concluded that Alice had been subjected to significant stalking and that army officials had failed to record a previous domestic assault charge against Harry. The review also found that Alice should not have been asked to make the decision on whether Harry should be arrested or not. The report concluded, quote, "The perpetrator's willingness to travel provided an indication of the level of his obsessive behaviour that was overlooked. In addition, there was a lack of clarity about the roles and responsibilities of the Home Office, police and armed forces, which led to some confusion about how best to deal with the perpetrator," end quote. The review also urged the Home Office to review the effectiveness of the police 101 number, which was the non-emergency number and the number that Alice had rang. The review uncovered that on another occasion, Alice had called the number but abandoned the call after being kept on hold for 7 minutes. Once again, another missed opportunity to support and protect Alice. Responding to the report, Alice's mother and father said, quote, "Alice died in tragic circumstances, and it is important that feelings are acknowledged, lessons learned, and improvements made. We hope that the Army will now realise that they have an important part to play when one of their soldiers is accused of criminal behaviour against a civilian, and like other agencies, will proceed to learn lessons from Alice's case," end quote. Changes were made nationally regarding the response to stalking and harassment as a result of Alice's murder. Commenting on the case, a Ministry of Defence spokesperson said that they were committed to tackling domestic abuse and in 2018 launched a strategy to help prevent domestic abuse in all of its forms. This included the prevention of abuse in the home and providing support to families of service personnel who may be affected.
I don't think I ever stopped thinking about Alice, really. Part of the time, you're carrying on doing normal things, and then something just reminds you. It's a normal life, and Alice-sized hole in it.
Alice Ruggles' life was cut tragically short by a man who had an extensive history of controlling and abusive behaviour. Alice reported the behaviour, yet police and the army didn't take her complaints seriously, and then her worst nightmares came true when in one final act of dominance and control, Harry Dillon snuffed out her life. Alice's murder is a potent reminder of why reporting abusive behaviour must be taken seriously in all cases. It is imperative that Alice did not die in vain, and still today, much more work needs to be done to publicise and identify stalking and controlling behaviour in a bid to prevent any other person suffering a similar fate. That is exactly what Alice's parents are doing with the Alice Ruggles Trust Fund. They work tirelessly to raise professional and public awareness, as well as campaigning for improved legal measures to deal with stalkers. While this should not have been Alice's legacy, it is one that she would be proud of. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. I'd like to give a huge thank you to my new Patreon supporters, Michael Crastins and Kayla. I'm currently working on my new exclusive episode for Patreon and Himalaya Plus, so if you want more Morbidology, feel free to check that out. The links are in the description. Once again, I'd also like to thank everybody who has left a kind review or rating or on iTunes or wherever else you're listening to your podcasts. I'm eternally grateful for all of the support. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, Murderous Minors. Until next time, take care of yourselves and have an amazing week.
Just so you know, this show is about scary stuff. So don't say I didn't warn you guys. And remember, don't be scared.
Murderous Minors brings true tales of children who have killed. Premeditated murders. Accidental killings and deaths. From toddlers to 18-year-old killers, no one is too young to take a life. Join me, War Baby, as I try to tell these stories of the young who've killed, the lives they took, and even the ones who've been left behind. Why do children kill? What do we do with young killers? And do they kill again? Until next time, don't be scared.